Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to all of our listeners. You are listening to the George Foster Diamond Report, where all bases are covered. And as usual, we have very, very interesting segment tonight. Hello, Coach Foster.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
Good, good. Great evening.
Yes, and before we get into our segment, let's go into the news behind the bench on what's going on in the nation. Now, of course, everyone knows the All-Star Game is coming up, and we'll get deep into the players' ballot in our next segment. But what also is coming up is the 2015 draft that's going to take place from Monday through Wednesday. And they'll begin with the top 75 picks, which also will be streamed on MLB.com. What are your thoughts about the draft coming up?
The draft's always exciting for the kids who they believe that they're going to get drafted by teams, and of course it becomes disappointing if they do not get drafted. But it's looking at the future of baseball, seeing if how many teams are going to draft from high school or going to draft from college. So it's going to be exciting to see who goes where. You see a lot of guys starting to surface and do well, like Bryce Harper, and he played with this kid, Gallo, who's with Texas, just been brought up. And then Bryant with the Chicago Cubs, who's done a great job. So they started to materialize and be productive. So it's going to be exciting to see what the Reds are going to, who they're going to draft or what other team's going to draft. And I haven't really seen a lot of before I had seen a profile of most of the players, but I haven't seen that as of yet. Maybe start tomorrow night, just going through what guys they think will be drafted high.
Yeah, it certainly is exciting. Any other prospects that you heard or players that may be coming up from even the minor leagues? I know they were talking about Tyler Stevenson.
Yeah. I don't know why they're waiting on him, but I guess when they start winning, they'll bring him up. Like the Cubs, they decided to wait it's not really exact science on when to bring a guy up, but they try to bring him up in a time frame that it's going to be positive or favorable for that individual. Then other strategies involved that I want to bring them up early that would delay them going to arbitration. So a lot of things are happening for them to decide on when they will bring a player up.
Yeah, and I mean, does a lot have to do with just speculation and potential? Isn't that a big sort of risk? And sometimes you just have to go with it, right?
Well, it's always speculation, but also it's need. They need that pitcher or that infielder to fill a spot. Say with the Rangers, they needed Gallo to come up because Beltre got hurt, and he was swinging the bat very well, so they felt it was an opportune time to bring him up and get him in the swing of things, and thus far he's doing well. So it depends on if it's the need, but it's always speculative how that kid's going to do when he gets to the major league. You can cross all the T's and dot all the I's, but until he gets a chance to perform, you won't know what he's able to do. It's a good example again with Bryce Harper. You didn't know what he's going to do, but now he's starting to produce. It took a while for it to happen, but it started to happen.
Right. That's true. And coming from a coach's or organization perspective and looking at the draft, what would be your tip? I guess pick three teams, and what would your tips be specifically for that organization when looking to draft a player?
Well, I look at, it's like with the Astros, they're gonna get a top round draft choice because according to how you finish, and of course
right.
They didn't finish high, so they're probably gonna be maybe looking for catching that hit with some power. The pitching is going well. They have non-pitchers doing well, so they're probably going to be looking for catching. Clubs like the Indians or maybe the Milwaukee Brewers, they may need catching is fine, but they may need a third baseman because with Ramirez retiring. So they look first. You draft what you need, and you draft insurance. So sometimes you don't draft the best player, but you draft what's best for you.
Right. That's definitely a key thing and something to think about. And if not many teams have a huge overhead of money, so what would those teams have to do? Would they sort of have to stay within their farm league?
Well, they will draft, but they draft signable players that will be able to sign within their budget. And a top-round draft choice they may not draft because, say, he's going to look for big money. So try to find somebody who plays the same position but it's going to be lower in the draft. So it's the money situation come into play more so now with the new ruling than before. So you have to be careful how do you spend your monies or invest your monies and making sure that you get somebody who's going to help your ball club in the future.
So when you were being drafted, I know from the organization's perspective, you said those three key things of making sure that they're drafting specifically that would cater to their organization, not just the best player. But from the player's perspective, you also want to do your homework as well, correct?
Right, because there are guys who've been drafted by a certain team and they decided not to sign. Point in case is the pitcher for Cole, who pitches for the Pirates. He was drafted twice, but he decided not to sign. Because sometimes you don't want to go to that particular team. You know, in that organization's not going to win for a while, so you want to go to an organization that's a winner, and you're able to fit in. So it's risky sometimes, but if you're going to be drafted high in the beginning, there's a good chance that you will be drafted high a year later.
Oh, that's true. So you're not only thinking about what's happening now, but also your future. And also, does the city have to do with anything, or does it ever have to do with any of your decisions? Thinking about outside of the game, sponsorships, endorsements, or was that, did that play a small role when you were drafting?
When I was drafted, it didn't really play any role because the endorsement situation wasn't as prominent then as it is now. You just wanted to get an opportunity, in my case, get an opportunity to play.
Right.
And the Giants was the organization I wanted to play for at the time because I liked Willie Mays. So it was ironic I got a chance to play in that organization then alongside Willie Mays. But when you get drafted, it's not a guarantee you're going to spend your whole career with the same organization. So you may get drafted by the Giants, but there, okay, now you got, there are 29 other teams that will have an opportunity. You may end up playing for one of those other 29 teams. So you're going out there getting drafted to play Major League Baseball. You're not sure which team you're going to play for your whole career or what teams you're going to play for during your career.
That's true. There certainly is a lot to think about. Now, moving on to our main segment, our focus tonight is speaking about breaking records. Now, breaking records entails many different segments. And first, actually, it's also in the news right now. They are speaking about Pujols passing Jimmy Fox's with his record of 535 career home runs. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it just seems as though records are being broken on a consistent basis. Start with A-Rod. He's second in first in the American League as far as the top RBI guy in history, and he's second in Major League Baseball behind Hank Aaron. He's
right.
surpassed Babe Ruth in certain categories, and Ichiro has surpassed Babe Ruth in certain categories. But in Pujols' case, just indicates how consistent that he's been, and he will. Has an opportunity to probably be in, not probably, but with over 600 home runs, getting on that 600 home run list. So that's quite a feat to do. And I say it's come from consistency and putting the numbers up year in, year out.
Definitely. And, of course, standards and elements and the environment is probably most likely different from back with Hank Aaron until now. Do people put that into account, or are they just based upon these records according to the present, what situation and what condition they're given right now?
Well, they don't really look at the condition, but when you look at a Hank Aaron, you look at a Willie Mays, you knowing that you look at the competition, a lot of the guys who are in the Hall of Fame as pitchers pitched against a Mays or an Aaron. So they're going to have, they had better competition than say now. You have guys who feel, there are a few guys that you, like A-Rod, may have faced that will make the Hall of Fame. But still, you give the guy credit for being able to go out there and accumulate those RBIs or those home runs. I feel it's more diluted now than before, the numbers. You should be given that opportunity. But in his case, maybe he won't make it to Hall of Fame because the steroid allegations. And so
Right. No
matter what numbers he may put up, he may not make it into the Hall of Fame.
That's true. And then before we get into the specifics of the star players of these breaking records, and I know everyone knows the big names that we'll go into, let's start from the beginning. How do you even begin to get on that path? What was your mindset when you wanted to break a record of those who came before you, those greats who came before you?
Well, I guess I'll use an example of Pete Rose, that he had in mind to break Ty Cobb's record. So you have to break it down, analyze it, how many hits per season, how many seasons that you need to do that. And he looked at being able to play 20 seasons at least and average maybe 200 hits. It's going to be up in at least 4,000 hits. So he, knowing that's what he had to do year in, year out, And same as a guy who hits home run, if he wants to have 400 home runs, of course, if he plays 10 years, need at least average 40 a year. But Hank Aaron never did hit 50 plus home runs, but he averaged probably 40, 42 home runs a year, so he was consistent in that category. But you have to sit down and if 3,000 hits, what you need to do on a yearly basis, what you need to do on a monthly basis to accumulate that, is not all going to come at one time. And some years you may not have 200 hits, but you want to be close to that, and the next year somewhat try to make up for it. But looking at 200 hits a season and averaging 33 hits a month, and that's at least 198 hits, and you're going to pick up two or three hits along the way. So you just have to have those goals and break it down, what you got to do monthly, yearly, and on and on.
Yeah, and this, what you're describing right here, takes tremendous patience, and I'm not sure, and it's good for the younger generation to hear this and understand it, but it's a marathon, and it doesn't just happen overnight, and you basically just broke it down of what you have to have a goal for yourself, not in addition to the daily tasks of winning the game or winning that series, winning the homestand, but having that overall long monthly, daily, yearly goal. For you specifically, did you have a game plan? I'm going to reference this article called Creating an Inner Desire by a PhD named Joan Salka-Center, and the title for it is called Your Performance Edge, and she spoke about different goals and things that you have to have, and that it takes a process, that A, you have to have the hunger and passion, B, you have to have the courage to succeed, because some people get scared when they have all this pressure and they're doing all these great things and attaining all these accomplishments, but then they start to get that anxiety of, can I continue this performance? Can I continue this high? And see the discipline and commitment to excellence. So were any of these things going on in your head when you attained such great achievements in your career?
Well, the thing is when you have confidence you can do something, there's not pressure. You prepare for that opportunity. And the courage is believing that you can do it again. Some guys do not, they don't want to be successful. They don't want to, in a sense, say win a batting title or win 20 games because they are afraid they're not able to do it again or repeat it. So winning 18 or 19 games, that's fine with them. Hitting 298 or 299 is fine, because if they hit 280 the next year, because hitting 300 is a different plateau as far as compared to hitting 299. So it's not only having the courage, but having that desire and the confidence that you can do it. But once again, you have to have goals and knowing that it's a process. You got each year start all over knowing what you need to do, and you make it, no matter what start you get off to, you still want to stay on that consistent path, and being consistent on a longer period of time, not just go out there and put it together a month or 2 months, but see how you can do for that 6 year or 6 month period during that season, and then each year you got to go out there and dedicate yourself to working out physically, mentally, mechanically.
This is all great things, and I know, of course, they're great advice, and it definitely worked. And speaking of advice that was put into work, I know you won't mention it, but all your achievements and goals, how are you able to get from one to the other? I'll briefly mention 5-time All-Star National League MVP, MVP, 3-time National League RBI champion, Silver Slugger Award, MLB All-Star MVP, 2-time National Home Run Champion, of course, the Reds Hall of Fame, and 2-time World Series champ. How did you not come complacent with that first quote-unquote achievement of excellence? How did you just say, oh, well, I attained what I wanted to do, and I'm just going to sit back and settle on this great success? How did you keep pushing yourself year in and year out?
Well, that's the opposite word is pushing yourself, but yet I look at the numbers I put up or the stats I put up that I felt still feel that I was an underachiever. In the beginning, I thought I was an overachiever, but looking back, I felt maybe I could have won more home run titles or made the All-Star game more times, but nothing you can change what did transpire. But in my teaching kids, trying to get them, encourage them to not to be complacent, but keep working hard at it and feeling that setting goals, always setting the goals. Once you set the goals, that helps push you. And in my case, I always try to do as well or better than Tony Perez or Donnie Bench because they're always going to be up there. Some of these awards came, it's a byproduct of one other thing. If I go out there and lead the league in home runs or RBI, that's going to give me a chance to be the MVP of the league or win a Silver Slugger Award or make the All-Star team. So those things become byproducts. I wasn't going out there to play hard to make the All-Star team, but to see what I can do as an individual commitment for a group effort, most of the other things will become a byproduct.
That's certainly true. And we've had many, of course, like you said, your people who you looked up to and compared yourself to who also did break the records and I'm sure have the same exact standards as you. How do you deal with those teams who have players in their organization who broke records in the beginning of the season, doing a great job, but then all of a sudden as a team, the dynamic came to a sort of a slump? And how do you get yourself out of that?
Well, I just had to, I guess, regroup and reanalyze what you were doing before and need to work on what you were doing before that was successful and finding that out, slow everything down. Some guys, when they're not hitting well, they try to hit home runs, but they feel that home run will bring them out of that rut that they're in. But the main thing is breaking down what's the process, what approach up to the plate, and being patient with yourself. If you 0 for 10, you're thinking that a home run will get you back on track, but that's only one for 11. But it's getting a good pitch to hit and hitting it hard and having a good at bat, good approach when you go out there, have a quality at bat. You're going to get up 500-plus times, so you have a chance to get hot and get your batting average up or get your home runs up or get your RBIs up. But you need to reanalyze everything and make sure that everything's in order.
Yes, in order it really shall be. These are all great, great tips and advice for kids and practical advice of what exactly you need to do. We now have come to our segment where we talk about the team or player catalyst of the week. And Coach Foster, who would that be?
I had to look at Gallo for Texas. Here's a guy that he just had been brought up his first game. He hit his debut. He hit two home runs in that game. I think he had gone at least 3 for 4. Two home runs and a double, and driven in about 4 or 5 runs. So that was a great day for him. Very impactful, and that's another plus as far as offense for the Texas Rangers.
Definitely. And team?
The team had to still look at seeing how consistent the Astros are. They're again, 4 or 5 games up, but they're still being studied. They're not panicking. They're still playing hard, playing quality baseball. They may go out there and lose two. I think they were on like a three or four game losing streak, but they have the confidence that they're going to come back and do a good job. And they have guys who they don't not a lot of experience, but a lot of confidence.
Yeah,
Confidence and experience. So they're two big things, especially in sports. Any game that you would highlight, a player or games that you feel like were the game of the week?
Well, the player that I feel that was impactful, Alonso with the San Diego Padres, hit a grand slam to tie the game against the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds were leading like 7-3 in the seventh inning with two outs, two strikes. He hit a grand slam to bring the Padres back to 7-7, and the Padres ended up winning that game 9-7. So that was impactful and a key hit for the San Diego Padres performed by Alonso. And ironically, Alonso is a former Red. He was drafted by the Reds number one back about 4 years ago. So he came back and ended up hurting him.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that certainly was a big one, a big game. Of course, you're listening to the George Foster Diamond Report. We are here every Sunday at 9:30. Tune in. You can feel free to call if you have any questions, if you have any opinions. You can give us a call at 347-539-5397 and let us know what your thoughts. Let us know if you have any ideas or possible you'd like some suggestions for your kids' team or maybe college level as well. I, of course, would like to read the Sunday scores for this evening. Lots of games going on, lots of games that just occurred. The LA Angels, they played the Yankees. They fell to them. The final score was 6-2. Currently, St. Louis is in the bottom of the fifth playing against the Dodgers, and they are losing to Dodgers 2-0. Houston's final score against Toronto, 7-6. Toronto came out with a big W. Baltimore's final score was 7-3 against Cleveland. Came out with a good win in that game. Cincinnati came out with the win, as you said, 4-0 final score. Final score for Boston, 7-4 against Oakland. Came out with a W against Atlanta, 3-0. The San Francisco Giants fell to Philadelphia Phillies, 6-4. Detroit came out with a big W against the Chicago White Sox, 6-4. And Milwaukee fell to Minnesota. The Minnesota Twins, close score, low score, 2-0. Texas came out with a close game, but they fell to Kansas City, 3-4. And Chicago Cubs came out with a W against our Washington Nationals. Two more games. Miami came out with a close win against Colorado, 3-2, and the Mets came out with a win against Arizona, 6-3. Tampa Bay came out with another win as well, 3-1 against Seattle. And that was the Foster wrap-up for this evening. And this evening segment was about breaking records and having that mentality of excellence, no matter what, whether it's goals for the day, goals for the week, goals for the month, and even goals for the year. It's a marathon process. But if you want to get to that level of breaking records, that's what it's going to take, right, Coach Foster?
Right. You want to strive for excellence, not perfection, and never stop improving.
And that's certainly true, and I hope that all the young players and those developing on every level of leagues can follow that advice. And thank you again for listening. We certainly tonight have covered all bases. And it's about the development, strength, and the drive of an athlete. Signing off, this is Star Foster, and you're listening to the George Foster Diamond Report. Have a great evening, everyone.
Good night, and keep on working.
Robinson waits. Here comes the pitch. And there goes a line drive to left field. Swan is after it. He leaps. It's over his head against the wall.